Okay, holding on, Erevin, Daf Chaf Zayin, with a better bottom of Chaf Vav. I'm gonna bet at the Mishnah. Bechol ma'arvin mishtat min chutz me'amayim min ha'melach. Right? So you can make an Erev or a shutfut with everything except for water and salt. Basically, the way the Erev works is if you want to extend the distance that you're allowed to walk on Shabbat, generally your 2,000 amot start from where you begin Shabbat. But if you wanted to put, let's say, a piece of food somewhere and establish that as the place that you're starting Shabbat, then your 2,000 amot is around the food, right? So in every direction. So if you put a piece of food within 2,000 amot of you, then it extends 2,000 amot in the other direction. But you can't do that with just everything. And similarly, if you want to make an Eruv Chatzerot, so there has to be a common food item, let's say that's owned by everyone in the Chatzer, so that everyone is allowed to move around the Chatzer, because you need to move around the Chatzer to have access to the commonly owned food. So that's how that works. And you're allowed to use anything except for water and except for salt. V'kol nikach mikesev maser. Right, so when it comes to redeeming Meiser Sheni money, right, so you have your produce, and if it's a year of Meiser Sheni, so then the second 10% of your produce is supposed to be eaten in Yerushalayim. And generally what people would do is to not bring 10% of their produce to Yerushalayim, is you would just sell it and then take the money and then buy what to eat in Yerushalayim with that money. But you can't just buy anything. You cannot buy water and salt. Hanodir min amazon mutar b'mayim v'melach. And if someone made a vow to not have anything that's nourishing, you're still allowed to have water and salt. Marvin l'nazir b'yayin l'yisur al b'truma. You're allowed to make an eruv for a nazir with wine, even though you can't drink it. And you go ahead and make an eruv for Yisrael with truma, even though you can't eat it. Sumchus omar b'chulin. Sumcha says no. You can only make it with non-consecrated foods. Lakon beta pras, Rabbi Yehuda Omer afilo beta kvarot. Right, you can put the eruv of a kohen in a beta pras. A beta pras is a field that used to be a graveyard that was plowed over and may have bones that are metame in it still left there. In which case, a kohen is not supposed to walk through it. But you're allowed to put the eruv there, even the kohen is not allowed to walk through it. You're allowed to put the eruv there for a kohen, even though a kohen can't walk through it. And Rabbi Yehuda says you can even put his truma in a grave. Right? So because he can surround himself on all sides and then go in there and eat it. So this is a theoretical way that he can get to the food in the graveyard and eat it. Gemara, Amar Yochanan ein lemedin min haklalot, v'afilu b'makom shnemar bo chutz. So Rabbi Yochanan teaches the following rule. Wherever it says all things, you can't assume that's actually talking about all things. It has a reason to say all things, but it's not to say that there are no exceptions. And by the way, even if it says chutz me, meaning it's about to teach you exceptions, that doesn't mean that those are the only exceptions. For the fact that Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, even in a case where it says chutz, it sounds like he's not talking about our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says chutz, right? So if he was talking about our Mishnah, he wouldn't teach the rule and then say, even in a case, right? He would just say that we don't learn from those general rules, everything. And since our Mishnah was a case where it taught chutz, I would assume that even if the Mishnah teaches chutz, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan has to specify even in a case where it teaches chutz, it's clearly he's not talking about our Mishnah, because then it would have been obvious. Hatam kai, right? Rather, so where? What is it? What's he commenting on? Kol mitzvah ases shezman grama anashim chayavim anashim p'turev, v'shelo zman grama achad anashim echad anashim chayavim. Right? He's talking about the following case, where it says that all positive time-dependent mitzvah, women are chayav, and women are potter, and men are chayav, and all positive non-time-dependent mitzvot, men and women are chayav equally. That's the case he's talking about. Uklalahu, and he would say as follows. Is that really a rule that all time-dependent positive mitzvot women are potter from? The chometz aseh shezman grama anashim p'tur, and harei matzah simcha ve'akel, the mitzvah aseh shezman grama anashim chayavot. But don't we have the cases of achilat matzah and simcha, which is the obligation to rejoice in the chag, and the hakel, which is the gathering, done Yerushalayim. All those things are positive time-dependent mitzvot, and women are chayavin. V'chol mitzvot aseh shelo azman grama nashim chayavot. Harei Talmud Torah periviv v'pidyon apein. The mitzvot aseh shelo azman grama v'nashim peturot. When it comes, is it really true that all positive non-time-dependent mitzvot women are chayav like men? When it comes to Talmud Torah, when it comes to periviv, when it comes to redeeming the firstborn, those are positive non-time-dependent mitzvot, and women are pater from. So rather, the rule that teaches you all is clear. clearly not literal. We're not exact. And then Rabbi Yochanan commented on that. Yeah, you cannot learn from the time, if it says all, you can't learn that there are absolutely no exceptions. Even if the Mishnah were to say, except for, you can't assume that those are the only exceptions. So we also have an example, another proof for that idea that kol doesn't mean that there are no exceptions. Anything that that a zav carries becomes tamei, but anything that a zav sits upon is going to be tahor. Except for something that is designated for sitting or lying upon, v'adam, and similarly a person. Those things, even if a zav is sitting upon them, become tamei. V'tu leka, and even though we taught all, right, is there no other cases, are there no other dinim, no other things that become tamei? V'ha'ika merkav, but doesn't something that a zav rides upon also become tamei? Hi, Mirka of Hechidami. What do we mean when we say something that Zav rides upon? If he's riding up, if he's sitting upon it, well, then that's something he sits upon. That's what we didn't need to teach Mirkov, because Mirkov is just something that you sit upon. No, rather say like this. Ha iga gaba de ukva de tanya ha okif tame Moshe vatafos tame Mirkov. Right, when it comes to the part of the saddle that you don't really sit upon, but you just hold on for balance, but it is facilitating your riding, like we taught in a Braita, that the top of the saddle that you sit upon is Tamei Moshav, something that you sit upon, and the part of the saddle that you hold on for balance is Tamei Merkav, is Tamei because you were riding upon it. So clearly, riding upon something, by Azav riding upon something, even if you're not sitting directly on it, is going to be Metamei, and yet we didn't teach it in the Mishnah. Right? So we can learn from there that just because the Mishnah says all, it does not mean that it's literally every single example, and even if they bring exceptions, that doesn't mean that's all the exceptions. I'm a Ravina. Right, so we also have this principle. That just because it says all doesn't mean it's really all. V'tu leka, right? So because we taught in the Mishnah that in everything you're allowed to make an eruv from or a shutzfut with, except for water and salt. Now, are there no other examples of something you can't make an eruv with? Va'ika kameinu pitru, but aren't there truffles and mushrooms that you're not allowed to make an eruv with or a shutzfut with? Ela shemaminayin lamdinu me'aklalev v'afilu mekom shenav v'chutz. Rather, you can't learn from all that it always means all, even if there's a case where it says chutz me. You can't assume that those are all the exceptions. All right, so further in the Mishnah, hakol nikach bekesef meiser, anything can be bought with kesef meiser sheni money, except for water and salt. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, chad matni aer v'chad matni meiser. Right, one taught that teaching about the meiser sheni money. With respect to a Meiser Sheni, as we saw, and one taught it with respect to an Eruv, meaning one taught about the water and the salt with respect to Meiser Sheni, one taught about the water and the salt with respect to an Eruv. Chad matnia Eruv, lo shano el b'mayim b'fnei atzmo, melech b'fnei atzmo, aval mayim b'melech ma'arvin. Right, the one who taught it about an Eruv says that we only said it's a problem to have water or salt, but if the water and the salt were together, then that could be used as an Eruv. Right, that was what one of them taught. Aval v'chad matnia Meiser, and the one who taught it about Meiser said as follows: Lo shanu elab mayim b'fnei atzmo melech b'fnei atzmo ve'edein nikachin aval mayim melech nikachin b'kesef meiser. Right, and the one who taught it about meiser said as follows: that we only taught by water and by salt that you couldn't exchange meiser sheni money for water or salt, but if they were together, you could exchange meiser sheni money. Now, what's the practical difference? Don't they seem to agree on everything? Ma dematni a meiser kol shekein ha'eruv, ma dematni ha'eruv aval meiser lo. Right, no, because the one who taught this rule that we only taught water and salt separately, but together, we would say that it's allowed. If you taught it about an Eruv, if you thought about Meiser, then all the more so you can assume that you would hold by Eruv the same rule that if they were together you'd be allowed to use it. However, if you thought about Eruv, you assume the same that about Meiser you'd be allowed to exchange it for salt and water. Meaning the Tana who taught it about an Eruv, that once you have salt and water together it works for an Eruv, you can assume that you can take Meiser Sheni money and redeem it for salt and water. However, if you only taught me about the Eruv, sorry, if you've taught me about Meiser Sheni, I can assume that it works for an Eruv. But if you taught me about that little trick when it comes to Eruv, I would not have assumed that you're allowed to use it for Meiser Sheni. My time, well, why couldn't I make such an assumption? Pei Rabba Inan, because when it comes to Meiser Sheni, we have this explicit law that it needs to be fruit, or the fruit of something in a broad sense, the product of something, right? In which case, if you make a chiddush to include water and salt together in the category of the product of something, that's a big chiddush. And so I know you can use it for Eruv, but if you say that you can use it for Eruv, I don't know that you would consider it the fruit of something, so maybe you cannot exchange Meiser Sheni money for it. Rabbi Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, so he taught it about Meiser, meaning Kavachom for Erev Meitive, and they challenged him. Hey, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, Lefnei Rabbi Lezer, Shel Beit Abba, Hayu Lochim, Sir Bekesev, Meiser. Right? So they testified that the house of Rabbi Abba, or Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish said in the house of Rabbi Abba, they take a fish brine from the Meiser Sheini money. Amar lo, Shem lo Shemata, Ela Shakir ve Dagim, Urvim Behen. Yeah, but maybe they only did that when they had the fish, when it had, you know, fish guts still mixed inside of it. And that's why they were allowed to take it. However, just the brine, maybe they wouldn't have taken it because I don't assume that they could have been so Mekel when it came to Meiser Sheini. Vafilo Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, lo kamar Ela Betzir, Desham de Perehu. Right? And even Rabbi Shuv, and by the way, that's not a rejection to my Shita when I said that that water and salt mixed together would not work for Meiser Sheni, because even Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, who only says that about fish brine, right, that has fish fat definitely still in it, but Mayim Melech lo, but even he wouldn't say about water and salt that you're allowed to, right? Amar Rabbi Yosef, lo nitzucha ela shenatan l'tocha shemen. Right, so alternatively, it's only if you put oil together with the salt, with the water and the salt, that you'd be allowed to take it with Meiser Sheni money. Amar le'abayev, typically mishum shemen. Well, then couldn't you just exchange it between oil? Meaning, it's only you can only do that if there is oil mixed in with the water and salt. Yeah, but then you could just buy it for the oil. So what's the chiddush there? Lo nitzrucha shenatan dmei mayim melech behavla. Right? No, it's only. But you still need to teach me the case because if you still need to teach me such a case. Because if someone includes water and salt in the overall price, right, then why would I assume that that works? Meaning, if I have 100 shekel of Meiser Sheni money, and I would only be spending, you know, 80 on the oil, and I'm spending 100, which includes the water and the salt, right, then it's a big chiddush that I'm allowed to use 100 shekel on something that includes salt and water when I'm paying also for the salt and the water. Rather, that's why I needed to teach you that case, that it's only when there's oil in it, and the oil in it means that you're allowed to be paying for the oil, the salt, and the water. But if there was no oil in it, then you couldn't just pay for the salt and the water. It is the mixture of oil, salt, and water that you're allowed to redeem with Meiser Sheni money, and even include the price of the salt and the water in what you're paying. Bavla Mishari, but who permits this concept of Havla, that you're allowed to pay for a lot of things together, even things that even things that generally would not be permitted to purchase with Meiser Sheni money, you're allowed to include it with things that you would be allowed to buy with Meiser Sheni money, and then include it in the price. Who says that you're allowed to do that? In, yeah, that's totally allowed. Vatanya, we learned the Braita. Ben Bagbag Omer, this is the less famous statement of Ben Bagbag, Babakar, Milamej Lochin Bakar, Algav Oro. So we learn from there that you're allowed to, meaning you're allowed to pay for an ox with Meiser Sheni money, but here you're even allowed to pay for its hide with the Meiser Sheni money. Even though the hide isn't edible, you're allowed to buy the hide together with the ox with Meiser Sheni money. And similarly, Bitzon Melamed Shelochin Son Algav Gizata. Similarly, you can take sheep and its wool. Ubi Yain Melamed Shelochin Yain Algav Kankeno. And with wine, we see that you buy the wine and the vessel the wine is in, even though the vessel the wine is in is not a food, and you would think that you can't pay for it, you can't use Meiser Sheni money for it. Sheikhar, Melamed Shelochin Temed Shehichmit, and for that it says strong wine or old wine. So even you can even take the temed from it once it becomes once it ferments, right? All these things that would not be considered fruit that you couldn't pay for Meiser Sheni money, you're allowed to pay for it together with something you are allowed to pay for, even though you're paying more for it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'id Mitargim Li Bebakar Li Bedeben Bagbag Muvlina. Right, anyone who can explain to me the sheet of Ben Bagbag on the word babakar, which what he learns from it, that you're allowed to buy the ox and the hide, I'll carry his clothing after him to the bathhouse. Meaning, it's a very difficult statement to me, and I don't really understand how Ben Bagbag learns this. My time, me bakar de lo tzarech. Right. So, and why does Rabbi Yochanan have such a difficulty with it? Because the word me bakar does not seem to. Right, because the all other phrases, I know what they're coming to teach me. I get it, but I have no idea, according to Ben Bagbag, what Babakar is actually coming to teach me here. What am I learning from Babakar that Ben Bagbag assumes that I'm learning? Because I don't understand. Right, so why did the Torah need to teach Babakar to teach me that I can buy the ox and its hide together with it? Hava amina bakar hud mizdaben al gav. Oro. Sorry, it's like this. My tzrichi de ikad of rachmana bakar, hava mina bakar, who dzdabin agav oro. So, what's the necessity for writing babakar? See, if the Torah would have just written babakar, what would I have assumed? It's davka, you could davka do this trick with the cattle, you buy its hide and the meat. Hava mina bakar, who dzdabin agav oro. So, I would have assumed that it's only the cattle that it can be bought together with its skin. Mishum de gufehu, because its skin is a part of it. About so, and alagav digzata, lav gufehu. Right, but I wouldn't have assumed the same by sheep because the sheep's wool is not a part of the body. Emelos, I would have said that it could not buy together with the sheep. Vika the Rachmana betzon agav gizata. But and if the Torah just would have said betzon, right, and meaning that I could understand that I could buy the sheep and its wool together. Hava amina mishum de mechubar ba aval yain al gav kan kano emelo. Right? So, I would have assumed that it's only the sheep and the wool that I can buy together, even though the wool isn't part of the skin. However, when it comes to, because it's attached, when it comes to wine though, the wine and the vessel is not attached, so maybe I cannot buy the vessel together with the wine. Aval yain al gav kan kano emelo. So maybe I can't buy the wine together with the vessel. Vi katav rachman av yain, hava amina mishum de hainu niti rute, aval temet mishich mitz di kiyuha be almahu emelo. Right, and if it just would have taught me wine, I would have understood that wine can be bought together with its vessel because the vessel is protecting it. However, just the alcohol that was fermented, I wouldn't have assumed that I can buy the fermented part. And that's why the Torah wrote shechar, old wine. So basically, if I would have written bakar, I couldn't have learned sheep because sheep is less obvious because it's not part of the skin. The wool isn't part of the skin. If I just would have written sheep, I wouldn't have known wine because wine is less obvious because the wool is attached and the can and the vessel is not. And if I just would have written wine, I would have assumed wine because the vessel is protecting it, but not necessarily, the fermented parts of alcohol, which are not protecting it, right? So all these things, I understand why I needed to write, right? So I understand, I get it now, why exactly I needed to write what I needed to write. And similarly, if the Torah just would have said, old wine, hava mina mai sheikhar, devela ki'ili to the peruhu, aval yayin al gav kankino emalo, right? If I just would have written sheikhar, I would have assumed that's talking about these specific drinks made of figs, because figs are considered fruits. Sorry, it's like this. If I just would have taught old wine, I would have assumed that what did you mean by sheikhar? I would have thought that you meant pressed figs, which are very strong and they're actually intoxicating because they're fruits, right? Meaning we know that you can only redeem them for fruits. We can only redeem Maaser Sheni money for fruits. And there are these fruits that are intoxicating. So I would have assumed that sheikhar means intoxicating fruits, which are solid. However, I would not have assumed wine unless you wrote it. Aval yain agav kankano emelo. But I wouldn't have assumed that you can then buy wine and the barrel together with it. Unless you wrote it to me explicitly, and if you just would have written wine, and I would have understood that I can buy wine together with the barrel, that I would have understood that I was allowed to do because the barrel is coming to protect it. But I would not have assumed that I can buy the wool together with the sheep. Right, and so the Torah has to write sheep so that I understand that I can buy sheep together with wool. Right, so basically I understood. We went forward. We understood why the Torah wrote bakar, right? And what it taught me, that even the skin. And then it taught me sheep to teach me even the wool of the sheep, which is less obvious than the skin of the bakar. And then it taught me wine to teach me even the barrel of the wine, which is less obvious than the wool of the sheep. And then it taught me sheikhar to teach me the fermented parts of the sheikhar, which is less obvious than the barrel of the wine, right? But then we asked, okay, but what if the Torah started with sheikhar? Well, if the Torah started with sheikhar, could I have learned wine from it? No, I couldn't have learned wine from it. So I had to write sheikhar and wine. Now I understand that it's not enough to write wine, it's not enough to write sheikhar. And what if the Torah started with wine? Would I have needed to write sheep? Yes, I would still need to write sheep. I wouldn't have been able to learn sheep from wine. So now I understand why the Torah couldn't just write sheep and it couldn't just write wine. So now that I understand, but why is it that the Torah had to write bakar? Because I understand if the Torah writes bakar, you have to write sheep. And if it writes sheep, you have to write wine. And if it writes wine, you have to write sheikhar. And if you write sheikhar, then you have to write wine. And if you write wine, you have to write sheep. But if you write sheep, why do you have to write bakar? That is the question. Seemingly, I could have written sheep, wine, and sheikhar, and not needed bakar at all. But bakar, lamali. Kitema. Now, if you want to say like this, if you want to say, here's what you had to write, Bakar. Kitema, ilokatav rachmana babakar, hava amina, tson agav ora, in agav gizata, lo. That I would have assumed, oh, what did it mean when it said sheep? Sheep, you can buy the hide of the sheep together with the sheep, but you can't buy the wool of the sheep together with the sheep, right? Katav rachmana babakar, latuye oro, ayater le, tson latuye gizata, right? That's then I wouldn't make such an assumption. I mean, if you only taught me sheep, I wouldn't make such an assumption that the that you can only use it for its hide, right? Why? Because sheep has hide and wool. So it's not logical for the Torah to try to teach me hide from a sheep when the sheep has both a hide and a wool. So the Torah should have just taught me ox, which the ox doesn't have wool, so I could only have learned the hide. The Torah wouldn't davka teach one limud, which is the most more confusing one, because you could have learned wool or hide from it. The Torah would teach you ox, which could only learn hide from it. So if I'm only supposed to learn hide, then the Torah would teach me ox and not sheep. So the fact that they taught me sheep, I would have assumed that also wool, right? So now, just by writing sheep, I can get hide and I can get wool, but just by writing ox, I'd only be able to get hide. But now that I've written sheep, I can get hide and wool, then why didn't it teach ox at all? E lo katav rachmana bakar, and if the Torah hadn't written bakar at all, lo hava min atzon agav ora, in agav gizata lo. Right? I still would not have said that if the Torah just wrote sheep and not ox, I wouldn't have assumed that the sheep can only be sold for its hide and not its wool. The im ken lishta rachmana bakar, because then the Torah should have taught me ox. The mela ayatir le tzon, right? And then I would have assumed that tzon is unnecessary. The kevan nekata rachmana tzon dafilu agav gizata. And from the fact that I taught sheep, then I know that even on behalf of its wool, bakar lamali. So now, why do I need bakar at all? Why don't I teach the bakar at all? Hashta tzon agav gizata mizdabna bakar agav oro mibaya, right? Because now that I know that a sheep can be sold for its wool, right? I would have made a kal v'chomer that an ox could be sold for its skin, because if a sheep can be sold by something that it's that is not part of it, but rather can be taken off of it even in its lifetime, then an ox, kal v'chomer, can be sold together with something that is part of it. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan said. I don't understand Ben Bagbag's shita, because I don't get what ox is coming there to include. Right. So what issue does Rabbi Huben Gadish and Rabbi Eliezer argue about, or do they agree upon and argue with the Tanaim? Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, Rabbi Eliezer, Darish, Ribuye Mu'ute, V'hanei Tanai, Darish, Klalei Prate. They argue with the following. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish and Rabbi Eliezer hold by something called a Ribuy and a Mute, right, where the Torah says an inclusive term and then an exclusive term, and then the Tanaim hold by a klal uprat, meaning a generalization and a particular. Right now, these are two different rules for darshaning out psukim, and depending on which rule you think the Torah is using, you get different halacha. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, Rabbi Eliezer, Darish, Ribuye, Umeute, Venatata Hakesef, Bechol Asher Taave, Navshecha, Riba. Right? So when it says about redeeming my Sersheni money, that Venatata Hakesef, Bechol Asher Taave, Navshecha, right? That you use the money for anything that your heart desires, right? That is clearly a Ribuy, right? Because it says anything your heart desires. That's a very inclusive term. Bakar, ubatzon, ubayayin, ubashechar, mie. But then when the Torah explicitly says you can use it for cattle and for sheep and for old wine and for new wine, well, that is limiting, because that's not anything, that's a particular. But then when it says afterward, anything that your heart desires, that's again a riboy, right? So you have a riboy, a very inclusive term of anything, then you have a miut where it specifies specific things, and then another riboy where it says anything. That is a riboy, that is a riboy, miut, the riboy. Now, what is the din when you have a riboy, miut, u riboy? Riba, umit, riba, riba, hakol, right? That comes to include everything. So I know that the end maskana is I can get anything except my rabbi, Rabbi Kol Mile, umay miet le Rabbi Eliezer miet tzir, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish miet my memelach. Right? So it comes to teach me that I include everything except for one thing. That's basically what a reboy mute and reboy does. Reboy mute and reboy does the following. It includes everything. It starts with a very expansive term, then it goes to a very limiting term, then it goes to a very expansive term. And what it comes to teach me is that I can basically include anything in it, except one thing has to be included, and that's why I brought a mi'at in the middle. So what is that mi'at? What thing is being excluded? According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, we're talking about salt water, and according to Rabbi Elazar, we're talking about fish brine. However, when it comes to the Tanaim, they hold that what we're dealing with here is a klal and a prat, right? A generalization and a particular. When it says that you can give it, you can use the money for anything that your heart desires, that's a klal, that's a general term, right? Prat. And then when it details the cattle and the sheep and the old wine and the new wine, well, that is a detail. And then when it says in anything that your heart desires, right, that is another klal. That's klal prat uklal, klal prat uklal. E asadan elakein aprat. And as we know, when it comes to a klal, a prat, and a klal, a rule, a general rule, a detail, and a general rule, right? You have to. What it means is that it's not limited to the pratim. It's not limited to the details that it brought in. But everything that you do include has to have something in common with the details. The details basically give you this defining criteria of what to include. Ma pratim farash pri mi pri vigdulei karka. So just like the prat, which we mentioned, was a product of a product of something, and it came from the ground. So too, anything that you want to include in something that Meiser Sheni money can redeem has to come from something and come from the ground. I mean, it has to get sustenance from the ground, and it has to be a product of something else. Av kol pri mi pri vigdulei karka, right? So we know that anything now that you would like to spend Meiser Sheni money on is okay, as long as it meets that criteria, which the pratim meets the two klals have in common, which is pri mitoch pri and gidulei karka. That's how a klal part of the klal works. V'tanya idach ma aprad mefurash vlad vladot haaretz. Av kol vlad vladot haaretz. Alternatively, you could learn it like this, right? Just like the prat is considered a... just like the prat is considered an offspring and created from the earth, so too, anything that is considered the offspring of something else and created from the earth. Basically, we have two understandings. One is a reboy, a mute, and a reboy. When you have an increase, a decrease, and an increase, the general rule is that everything is included except for one small decrease. And then we have a machloket as to what that decrease is. It's either salt water or it's fish brine. Alternatively, we have a klal, pratu klal, a general rule, a detail, and then another general rule. And when it comes to a general rule, a detail, and another general rule, what we say is we only include things that are similar to the details, and then we have a machloket as to what are those common grounds in the details that we're trying to include things in it, and we either have something that is primi pri vigidulei karka, or we have something that is vlad vladot haaretz, right? Something that is produced by something else and created by the earth. Now we're going to continue that discussion tomorrow.